Hi, this is John Biney. You're listening to TV Confidential.
Well, let's hear it for him. Come on out here.
Ed Robertson welcoming you to TV Confidential. Radio talk show about television. Chuck Carter will join us in our second hour as we welcome Allison Mills Newman. Allison Mills Newman, actress, writer, producer, director, singer, songwriter, and composer. Allison made her network television debut in an episode of Mr. Novak that originally aired in 1965. That opened the door for many other roles in movies and television, including a recurring role opposite Diane Carroll in the groundbreaking NBC series Julia, and later as a regular cast member of the Leslie Uggams show on CBS. Allison, as you'll hear for yourself, is an independent spirit who has always had a desire to create and perform work with substance and meaning, including a series of faith-based films about a charismatic woman who helps young people, and especially young African-American women, make better choices in their lives. We'll talk about Allison's career as an actress, songwriter, singer, and filmmaker when she joins us, along with Chuck Carter, in our second hour. We hope you'll stay tuned for that. Our second hour will also include part two of a conversation that began last week with Jeff Littlefield. Jeff Littlefield, author of a new biography about iconic composer Nelson Riddle. We'll talk about Riddle's collaboration with Linda Ronstadt, which in many respects proved to be the coda of Riddle's career in music. We'll also talk about his work with Ella Fitzgerald and more when we play part two of our conversation with Jeff Littlefield in our second hour. Please stay tuned for that as well. In the meantime, Tony Figueroa and Donna Allen are with us for This Week in TV History. Tony's segment is always brought to us by our friends at Story Salon, Southern California's longest-running, regularly performing live storytelling ensemble. StorySalon.com, Facebook.com/StorySalon, youtube.com/StorySalon. Ordinarily, we do not have guests for This Week in TV History, but when the subject is Norman Lloyd, a man who lived to be age 106 and whose career in front of and behind the camera involved collaborations with Charlie Chaplin, Alfred Hitchcock, and Orson Welles, we have asked our friend Mark Dowidziak to sit in with us. Mark Dowidziak, of course, was the television critic for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. For more than three decades, he has written or edited more than 20 books on film, television, and American popular culture, including Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in the Twilight Zone, The Shawshank Redemption Revealed, and one of the very, very best books on television ever written, The Columbo File. Mark Dowidziak interviewed Norman Lloyd on two occasions, one of which was for the Columbo File. And as a matter of fact, Mark, I had forgotten this until I looked this up earlier this morning. Norman Lloyd's connection to Columbo came at an interesting and perhaps even pivotal time in the early history of Columbo, wasn't it?
Yes, it did. You might say that. Yes, the old toast, which is actually a curse, may you live in interesting times. Well, Norman Lloyd got the interesting times during that first season of Columbo.
Yeah, it was at the height of the acrimonious period between Falk and Levinson and Link.
Well, actually, the acrimonious period between Falk and Universal. Peter was at war with the studio. Levinson and Link were caught in the crossfire. You know, here they were essentially young writers who had been convinced by Richard Irving, who was then in charge of the television division at Universal, to be the producers on the first season of Columbo. They hadn't produced before. They were really thrown into the deep end of the pool. Dick Irving had directed the first two movies, Prescription Murder and Ransom for a Dead Man, and he convinced them that they should be the producers for that first season. And they were thinking about being producers anyway. It was a great way as writers to protect your own property. It's a common model today for writers to be also producers, hyphenates, and the showrunners as well. You know, we see that it's common with people like David Chase and Vince Gilligan. But back then, it wasn't quite so common, and they took it on. And it was a very, very difficult year, to say the least. They had a difficult star. they hadn't produced before, and they were under a time limit because they were going to lose Peter Falk in the fall to Broadway. He was going to go to Broadway to star in Neil Simon's The Prisoner of Second Avenue with Lee Grant, of all people, who he had just done the second Columbo,
yes, right.
Ransom for a Dead Man.
Yeah.
So Peter had asked the studio if he could direct a episode. Peter wanted to direct. I mean, Peter really wanted to direct. And the studio, and you know how Hollywood executives are type. Sure. Yeah, you can direct an episode. And Peter thought they meant it. So, you know, then it was like, well, which episode am I going to direct? There was originally going to be six episodes in that first. There were seven eventually because they added a seventh episode. So, you know, Peter was like, well, which one am I going to get? And the studio was clearly didn't care anymore whether he was going to direct. They liked what they were seeing. They thought they had a prestige show on their hands. But it hadn't aired yet. Columbo, nobody kind of knew whether Columbo would actually be a hit or not. And Peter started to, this really started early. This started on Dead Weight, where Peter's arguments with the studio, and it's built through that first season. Dead Weight was one of the very few episodes where the guest stars did not get along with Peter, because Peter was in a foul mood in Dead Weight, and Eddie Albert and Suzanne Plachette did not have fond memories of working on Dead Weight. Well, that's because Peter was at the height of his, he was getting sick, put that in quotes, he was staying home, he was had his doctor sending notes, and Levinson and Link were tearing their hair out. They were trying to keep this thing on schedule. They were writing, they were producing, they were rewriting, they were working with Stephen Bochco, the story editor, they weren't seeing their families, it was just awful. And here's their star making things even worse by, he's difficult to begin with, but then he's also now doing holdouts. This is to force the studio to let him direct. Now we come to Lady in Waiting, and Norman Lloyd gets the directing assignment on it. And Peter has decided now, this is where he's going to make his stand on Lady in Waiting. But instead of carrying his discontent onto the set, he decides this is just between him and the studio. So he goes, they start shooting Lady in Waiting. He goes up to all of them, and very politely, he goes up to Susan Clark, he goes up to Norman Lloyd, and he says, listen, I'm going to disappear for a while. It's got nothing to do with you. It's only the studio. But they promised me I could direct, and they haven't come through yet, so I may disappear for a while. So he told them up front that he was going to pull this, and he did. He stayed home. There were legal threats. There were all this huffing and puffing. And this was kind of a brave stunt on Peter's part, in a sense, because the show wasn't a hit yet.
Yeah.
And there was actually talk among the studio execs of who does he think he is? There was actual talk of recasting it or bringing somebody else in to play the part. One exec even floated the idea of having a different actor play Columbo every week. That, you know, it could be like Hamlet, and they would have different character people play the part.
Yeah.
There was all of this, but, you know, Peter just was holding his cards. Like a good gambler, Peter was just holding his cards. So Norman Lloyd had to shoot whatever he could. And what they did was, this was Norman Lloyd's great ploy. They hired a short actor, and they shot things from the back. They hired a short guy, and they shot things kind of in perspective. The guy was even shorter than, was a good deal shorter than Peter. They, you know, as a matter of fact, Richard Levinson referred to him as the midget that they hired. And they shot this person in perspective from the back, and to basically to get long scenes and get in scenes where they could, so that when Peter came back, they could do things as fast as possible. Well, the studio caved, you know, and Peter came back happy as could be. And it was a really, really happy set. And Peter dropped by the production offices And, you know, Levinson and Link were not in a very good mood with their star. The studio had even said to them, he wants to direct. You know, you guys are the producers. And they said, listen, you told him that he could direct. We don't think he should be able to direct. We wouldn't let him do it, but it's not our call. It's your call, and you told him. So, you know, we'll find something for him to direct. So, you know, he drops by the production offices, and he says to them, you know, so how did things go while I was gone? And Levinson said, well, not too good. We had trouble with one of the people on the set. And Falk said, really? Who? Levinson said, the midget. He wants to direct. So yes, no, there was a lot of barbed humor in that first. That was also the year that Levinson and Link gave Peter, who has, you know, obviously a glass eye, had a glass eye, for Christmas they gave him half a bottle of Murine. And things got so testy between them that, you know, somebody who visited the set asked Dick Levinson, well, Dick was a very funny guy, and he had a very caustic sense of humor. And somebody asked Dick, which one is the glass eye? And Dick answered, the one with the gleam of intelligence.
Wow.
So Norman Lloyd gets, in some ways, the most challenging episode to direct.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't hold it against Peter. He understood.
Yeah.
He was a veteran of having all those years he'd spent on the Alfred Hitchcock Presents and the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. He knew how television worked, especially Universal Television, because that was a Universal show.
And dealing with Orson Welles, he was used to dealing with big personalities.
That's right. That's right. So this didn't faze Norman Lloyd in the least. You know, he just basically said, well, I'll get what I can when I can. And then we'll finish it up when Peter comes back. And he had, like most people, even the people who had the most difficult times with Peter, you couldn't help liking the guy. There was just an innate likability and charm to Peter Falk, and that was not lost on Susan Clark and Norman Lloyd and Leslie Nielsen and all of the people who worked on that episode. So it wasn't, for all of that, it wasn't like Dead Weight. It was not an unhappy shoot at all. And I said that Norman Lloyd got the most difficult one to direct. That was actually until
the one that Falk
did episode.
Yeah.
Because with a certain amount of malice aforethought, Levinson and Link said, okay, let's let him direct. And they gave him the biggest headache episode possible to direct.
That was the one with Forrest Tucker and Patrick O'Neill that was set on a construction site.
It was actually said that the Century City construction, that's when Century City was being built, when they were tearing up what used to be the back lot at 20th Century Fox to build Century City. And so there was this huge excavation pit, and it was Blueprint for Murder, and with all that noise and all that construction crew and all that dust, on top of everything else, Peter had a cold during that period when he was directing. So Levinson and Link took a certain amount of glee in driving down to Century City and looking down on their star, down in that pit, trying to catch a scene here and there in the middle of all that noise and dust. And every once in a while, Peter would stop and shake his fist up at them. As if, because he knew what they'd done.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what they had done. And for all that, Peter did a pretty good job directing that episode.
He did.
Yep.
And if I remember correctly, Norman Lloyd visited the set to show his support.
That's right. Advice, guidance, and to give him some support. That's exactly right. That's kind of who Norman Lloyd was. That's a very good story of who Norman Lloyd was. For all the gigantic egos that he worked with, he had an extraordinarily healthy ego. Yeah, Norman Lloyd was never one to say, I worked with Hitchcock, I worked with Welles. You had to ask him. And then, you know, he would tell you these wonderful stories about working with these giants, and he'd tell you he was a very witty, erudite, warm guy, and he would tell you all of these things, but he wasn't one of these guys who, you know, was, oh, I worked with Hitch, you know. There wasn't any of that to Norman Lloyd. You know, he is very old school. Very old school in the sense of being, you know, kind of, he wasn't one of these bigger than Hollywood personalities that had to be the center of attention and had to have the spotlight. But once you asked him, he would certainly warm to the subject. He was a witty conversationalist, a great, you know, storyteller, and he obviously had stories to tell.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mark Dowidziak is with us to help pay tribute to legendary actor, producer, and director Norman Lloyd. Norman Lloyd, a man whose career in film, television, radio, and the stage pretty much spanned the entire history of 20th century entertainment. Norman Lloyd passed away this past Tuesday, May 11th, at the age of 106. Mark Dowidziak interviewed Norman Lloyd on two occasions while he was television critic for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Tony?
Actually, since you brought that up, I got to meet him, you know, it was like 30 years ago, because there was a show at Universal in the park that was centered around the Statue of Liberty scene in Saboteur. And he came to do a press event recreating that moment. And he was so soft-spoken and, I mean, just commanded everybody's attention. Yeah, he did refer to Hitch as Hitch. He was the only person there who referred to it, but it was just amazing talking, because he said, yeah, we shot that scene in December of 1940. And I'm going, so like a year before Pearl Harbor. And he goes, yeah. And, you know, he kept referring to Liberty Island as Bedloe Island.
Yeah.
But we were talking about, you know, the stuff that he did on Loki. And yeah, it was just kind of like, wow, this is a history. But, you know, at the time I knew him best from St. Elsewhere as Dr. Auschlander.
For me, that was my first introduction to Norman Lloyd. I mean, I've been watching him all my life, but it was St. Elsewhere, favorite show of mine. And you just fell in love with the character. He was one of my favorite characters throughout the whole show. And honestly, I was happy to see him in the finale of the show. And don't get me started on the finale of the show.
Yeah, there is no unanimity of opinion on that finale. I have a friend.
Yeah.
I think, Ed, you know David Bean Cooley.
Yes, I do.
St. Elsewhere is one of David's all-time favorite shows. And to him, St. Elsewhere could do no wrong. And we've been arguing about the finale since it aired. Yeah. Because I disagree with it. But I think it could do wrong. You know, but every series, no matter how much you love it, can do wrong. If you're doing, you know, 22 episodes or up a year, you're going to make missteps. There are going to be continuity problems. There are going to be bad. Nobody has 22 great stories a year. You know, I mean, in 2 years, you've done more stories than Shakespeare. It just doesn't work. You know, so you know, acknowledging. You know, as the old Chinese proverb goes, any masterpiece is flawed, and that a flaw is essential to a masterpiece. And, you know, so there, that is true of everything, and it's certainly true of St. Elsewhere. But we've been arguing about that finale.
Yeah,
I do not
and,
like
and, it. And it's going to deserve arguments for, you know, as long as that
decades
show.
Decades to
yeah.
come.
But
the other thing that kind of got, because you would see his character, Dr. Auschlander, if he was disappointed, he would rarely raise his voice. I think the only time that character raised his voice is that, you know, he needed to be heard over other voices or other noise. But if he was this, you know, there'd be a raise of an eyebrow and just a slightly different tone. When he was with us, when we were working with this replica of the Statue of Liberty torch, we had the script notes for this show. And it was something like, you know, Robert Cummings as the hero and Norman Lloyd as the evil Nazi agent. And he just looks at it and lowers his head, raises his eyebrow. He said, evil Nazi agent? Isn't that redundant? Is it Nazi agent just sufficient? But it was the tone, you know, it's like, I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. It's just over the way that it was scripted. And I think ever since then, nobody ever said the evil Nazi agent.
Well, you know, and I think that that's a very good observation, sound observation about Norman Lloyd and the character he played on St. Elsewhere. Neither one of them, they rarely raised their voices because they didn't have to. They brought such absolute authority to the moment that so you knew you were supposed to shut up and listen at that point. And that was true of Dr. Auschlander, and it was true of Norman Lloyd.
Mark Dowidziak is with us to help pay tribute to legendary actor, producer, and director Norman Lloyd.
We'll continue our conversation with Mark and Tony and Donna when we come back on TV Confidential.
Now you can make your home look great and save money. Right now, when you call Renewal by Anderson, you can buy four windows and get the fifth one free. Plus, you get 12 months with no interest, no money down, and no payments. Upgrade your home. Buy four windows and get the fifth one free. Installation and warranty are even included. And the Renewal by Anderson certified retailers take every safety precaution to protect you and your family. Hey, for 25 years, people have trusted Renewal by Anderson for their window replacement needs, and you can too. So call right now. Don't wait. Learn how to get your free window when you buy four.
800-413-9223. 800-413-9223. That's 800-413-9223.
Interest accrues from date of purchase, but is waived if paid in full within 12 months. Other conditions apply. We've adjusted our operations to serve you safely following all CDC guidelines. Visit renewalbyanderson.com for details.
Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or at TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411. Or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.